Morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon. I'm here today with a fellow veteran. He's a real veteran. I was in just a little over almost 3 years. But Jim was in a lot over 20 years. So he's a graduate of West Point. I'm honored and privileged to be able to call him a good friend. He and his beautiful wife, Lauren. We're going to talk about Patriots Day, but we're also going to talk about the Senior Center and all the things that are going on. And, you know, Patriots Day is not a national holiday.
No.
But I did a little research for today's program. But before I get started, I have to take a minute. Yesterday, being an old man, I'm a what's now known as a Ford. Fix often, repair daily. I was going up my cellar stairs, and I did something that caused me to collapse my right leg in excruciating pain. So I went to the Berkshire Medical Center's emergency room. And I want to tell you, I was triaged, in my opinion, and I do know a little bit about triaging, very appropriately and timely. And that's very important for people to understand. And then I have to tell you, the quality and the professionalism and the caring that every person that I had look at me, I can't say enough good things about it. So to those people in the emergency room at Berkshire Medical Center who dealt with the old fat ball guy yesterday, that's me. Thank you very much. And I'm on the road to recovery. I will not be running the marathon on Monday, although I did go the route twice last week to be sure, and I drove it, but it's still there. All right, now without further ado, Fourgua, Jim, welcome and thank you for doing this.
Yep, you're welcome, Bill, anytime.
Yeah, and here's a little history on this. I found it, actually, I wasn't as familiar as I thought I was. Most Massachusetts residents and long-distance runner enthusiasts, the third Monday of April is Marathon Day, but it's not really. It is Patriots Day. So what is Patriots Day, and what does it have to do with the marathon? Well, the Patriots Day, for that answer, they will go back to the American Revolution. On April 19, 1775, I remember it well. I was just out of high school, and Jim was just going in grammar school. The battles of Lexington and Concord kicked off the colonists' fight for independence from Great Britain. Just 2 months after Parliament declared Massachusetts to be a state in rebellion, the brave residents in the colonial took up arms and went to battle for the independence, for independence, eventually leading to the creation of the United States. Then, in 1884, Governor Frederick Greenhage was looking to replace a fast day. And you have to remember, they were pilgrims, so they were very religious. And then it was a day of fast, very religious situation. Been around since 1700. In the state calendar, without causing his constituents to lose a day of work, Greenhage found inspiration in the state's courageous battle for freedom and from British rule, renaming the holiday Patriots Day and moving it to April 19th. The new celebration would not only commemorate the battles that officially marked the American Revolution, but also the anniversary of the Baltimore riot of 1861, commonly known as the first bloodshed of the American Civil War. And then as we move forward, Boston Red Sox team became part of Patriots Day, playing a game at Fenway Park at 11:05, allowing fans to catch the end of the race of the marathon, which started in 1959. That's kind of a overview of what Patriots Day is. I know there's a lot of sales and blah, blah, blah. But just take a minute. If you can't even drive through a cemetery, take a minute and thank the Patriots because they started with this revolution and they ended with Afghanistan. So there's a lot of Patriots in between there. And the way it looks right now, there could be a whole lot more, but I don't want to go down that road right now. Jim, your service to the military, and you and I have discussed this, and it being in the military isn't a job, it's a way of life. And that's I was listening to a commercial about when guys leave the service. Some of them, they don't do well. They're homeless. They get addiction, and it's because that way of life breaks away from them. That's my unlicensed legal opinion.
No, I agree. I see a lot of the guys get out, and there's no structure anymore. Things that they're used to, getting up at a certain time every day, turning the lights off at a certain time every night. The structure is gone. I think the general population doesn't understand the structure. Even to this day, I'll go to a meeting, and if I'm not 10 minutes early, I'm already late. It'll get there. 2 o'clock will hit. People still coming in till quarter after. Even sitting there with the CEO or somebody else, and people just, it is what it is. And I think that wears on a lot of the veterans that were so used to, being on time, hitting the starting point of a mission exactly at time, not just your time, but it syncs up with all the other units that are involved. You have to cross the line right at the, the LD, the line of departure, right at the exact time of everybody. And, that's ingrained in you. And then to get out of the military and find people like, ho-hum, if within 10, 15 minutes is acceptable. And, I value my time, when going to a meeting and having to have another meeting after that or something else. And, it's just wrong. I think, but that's the way we've come. It never would have been tolerated in the military because all those things that you do on timing just train you to, again, when you hit the line of departure, you want to be exactly on time. You can't even be early because then you would get out ahead of your supporting troops on left and your right. Or especially if it's a multi-service attack and you're out ahead of everybody, and you got the Air Force or somebody coming in dropping bombs, and they're dropping them on you because you're too early. So, I mean, the ramifications of that are huge. But I just saw, and to your point that, a lot of people miss the structure. They miss the, reveille and taps and this that starts and ends their day. And, lights are out with taps, and if you can even stay awake that long after a
I
long
never
day.
had that problem.
No, not
No.
normal.
No.
It's different, and I can see how some people miss that and they need that because you have to remember too that a lot of people entered the military because they needed structure.
That's right.
Back in the early days of the all-volunteer army after the Vietnam draft ended, a lot of people went to court, and it was like you have two choices: Berkshire County House of Correction or join the military. And for a lot of people, it was exactly what they needed, and that's a good thing. But at the same time, some people get through their 2 years or 3 years, or maybe not even all of it, and they're back out and picking up their old ways, and maybe some of the people that they hung out with, which weren't the best. And it's the reason why they ended up in the military, and now they're back with them again. And a lot of times, those things don't marry up very well.
And it's the camaraderie. I've read articles on the Vietnam War about the racial strife and all that. Well, I got to tell you, maybe it's a unit I was with or where we were, but we all operated as one. And that's hard in this, especially this day and age. This is truly the I am or the me generation. And I think one of the hardest parts of separating from the military is the structure, I mean, I'm speaking for myself, and I wasn't in as long as you were, but the structure, the camaraderie, the only place I found a very similar camaraderie was in the police department. Same kind of thing. It's a paramilitary organization, but it's the camaraderie. When that call goes out, 1033, officer needs help, the world stops for everybody else and they go.
And you even see that here in Pittsfield. I mean, I know a lot of the members of the Pittsfield Police Department from Chief Dolly on down. And again, you got to trust the person to your left or right. You get guys like JP Murphy and all that on the
Used to be my neighbor.
and you got the SRT, the SWAT, whatever you want to call it. I mean, they're again very well trained, and they trust the person to the left and right. And a lot of places are like that. It's not just the police and the fire department the same way. You and I go way back with the fire department, our dads both being firemen. They trusted, all the guys. The guy that's you're up on top of a ladder truck and you're trusting that the guy down below knows how to run the ladder. And things that are you're up there waiting for water and you're trusting that the guy, the engineer on the truck knows how to turn the pumps on and give you water. Yeah, there's a lot of that. But there's a lot of places that aren't like that. And that's okay. It's their business model at what works for them. Those that are going to, be successful are going to figure out what their niche is, what they need to do, how they get along with one another. I see a lot of it now, unfortunately. A lot of businesses can't keep good help. And that's just, again, for various reasons. It might be the way they treat people. It might be, a better incentive, better pay somewhere else, and they'll jump the ship. I mean, I think the loyalty is gone. That's one thing you had in the military was loyalty, and an understanding. You treat your soldiers the way you want to be treated too, because everybody, there's a chain of command that goes all the way up. I mean, and I think some places just there's the lack of loyalty, and sometimes people will stick it out and they'll just wait for that one extra, string of hay to hit the thing, and that's what broke the camel's back. But they give the employees or employers a lot of opportunity, but you see it all the time. You go in one place and very happy with the service you get, and then you come back a month later. Where'd they go? They didn't work out. It's like, well, they were good to me. So it's a shame, but I think we have a lot to re we're still going to have to recover from what COVID did to us.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that a lot of people during COVID had an opportunity, which I think it was a silver lining to it. A lot of people took the opportunity during that downtime to better themselves. So instead of working the waitress and bartender jobs and all that, they got degrees. And now, to your point earlier about the nursing staff and the care, because I went through the same thing a couple of weeks ago, and it was just phenomenal. I just could not say enough good things about the nurses that took care of me,
Me too.
for around the clock for 3.5 days. And they were just unbelievable. And even in the middle of the night, the little ninja sneaking in trying to get your vitals, I'm like, I just turned the light on. It's like, I'm not sleeping real well anyway, so let me turn the light. But she came in with her flashlight trying to check the machine. I'm like, come on, let me just turn the light on, So they were phenomenal. And I think I shared with you, I had my first night in, I had a nurse who was on a 12-hour shift, 7 to 7. And they had to draw blood the next morning to check my blood levels. And I said, oh, I missed her. She went home. About almost 8:30, she comes in. So I made sure that your blood work got into the lab and all that. So she stayed an extra hour and a half. And at least with me, she might even stayed longer. I don't know. But that made me feel really good. And it was, but my point to that was that I know a lot of people during COVID started, especially when BCC got their nursing program reaccredited, that a lot of people took that opportunity to better themselves. So it's exciting when you see things like that. It kind of stinks when you go out to a restaurant and the service is a little slow, but when you look around, you see that they're downstaffed. And we just, and again, as long as people are better themselves out there, I think that's just very important. And we see a lot of that. And the medical field's a big one. I mean,
Oh yeah. Yeah,
nursing programs are huge.
and the thing is, I think I try to understand where the other person's coming from, and I can't really say because I try to understand triage, because when I was an EMT and I was part of it, but and some people come in there and think the world has to stop because they got a splinter. I found if I had to rate my care in timeliness, A plus plus.
I say
I
the same
wasn't
thing.
I was a victim of a bad knee and a fall, but I wasn't dying. I wasn't having a stroke. I wasn't bleeding. I wasn't having a heart attack. Thank God. So I think, yeah, I just, you're right. COVID has really threw a wrench in our society in a variety of ways. I was watching the Joint Commission school and city council meeting. And when you sit listening to, well, we had to put all these people on to re-get back into school. And then what happens? We got to lay them all off. Because the federal money dry. So I just like you, and let me say this about what you've done to revitalize and get that senior center. I mean, I know peers of mine that belong there. They so enjoy. I enjoy going in there. It's just a great place, and for a lot of people, you deliver socialization, which they so desperately needed after COVID.
They do, and they lost that during COVID, and we stayed closed the minimal amount of time. Like I told you before, we closed early prior to the governor's closing on St. Patty's Day, everything. But we about 2 weeks ahead of time, we shut down most of the programming because I was following all of the information coming out of Washington State with the nursing homes and all of that, and saw that our elder community, senior community, was most vulnerable to a lot of this, and that panned out to be true, as you saw the percentages of illness and deaths. But I think the big thing was trying to, again, reach out and help. As you recall, we made tens of thousands of phone calls to people. We continued with our transportation. We continued with the meals every day. Had all that. Plus, we were here manning the phones for resources. There were a lot of agencies still working, but obviously not in a walk-in basis. So, tried to link the people up with what they needed with a resource. And then came June. If you remember the rise and fall of the COVID cases, once the sun came out and the weather got better and people weren't congregating indoors, the numbers went down a little bit. And so, around Memorial Day, we had opted to start contacting the caregivers for our supportive day program. And the caregivers, obviously concerned about their loved ones, were, well, we're not quite ready for them to come back yet. About 3 weeks later, when we made that same phone call, is like, get them out of my house, get them back to somewhere. So we opened back up just a little over 2 months after we shut down, and had that all through until today. We're the only ones during COVID in the state that remained open, and it provided a huge benefit for those folks. Some of the places after COVID did not open again. It's a very costly program, so they did not open again. Some of them are just trying, even to this day, trying to get restarted. I know the state's throwing grants out there to get supportive day programs started again, but the problem is the grants only. Kind of like the ESSER money was, it's only for a 2 year program. And at the end of the 2 years, what do you do? Well, you got to turn around and fund it internally, and most communities can't afford to do that. So a lot of people walked away from the grant because they didn't want to get people excited and and it's hard to figure out where to get the money. And as you were saying with the joint meeting the other night, those ESSER positions were crucial. I don't believe that we're done with that dilemma of that. And I think the federal government fell short on, just a 3-year thing. It should have probably been longer, and maybe not for every district, but for a district
Yeah.
like Pittsfield Public Schools, it was probably necessary that that would get extended federally beyond the 3-year limit. And just like the ARPA money, ends, you got to spend it by the end of 2026, or the big end of 2025, I guess it is. But as you probably saw, they're also looking at some of these groups that received ARPA money. If they can't spend that money by then, we
Yeah.
don't lose it. So Mayor Marchetti and Matt Curwood and the team are looking at, and I think Gina and Deanna are looking at, those that won't be able to use it to bring it back in, so we get the full benefit of the ARPA money.
And what because being in the military, and I know w being part of the government, if they give you something, there's always strings.
Yes, there
And
is.
I hear, not so much in this council, or well, though I sometimes I think, but I'll leave that for another show. The old council, I'm not sure they understood. Yes, we got a lot of money on a lot of different grants, but there were a lot of strings attached to that money. And you might have wanted to use it to put up stop signs, but Kerwood and the team over there say, well, you can't do that. So then you beat them up. So
Right.
it makes, but you're right. I think the cutting the money for these schools at this time is really not good. And I hope somebody's reached out to Congressman Neal or the two down the senators, but it's I think history will not be kind to those people who ran the COVID-19 stuff.
Yeah, I think just the last couple of days, some new documents of 15 federal agencies knew about this before, years before this
Yeah.
happened. That's kind of a scary read, if you will, about how much of it's true. I don't know, but again, it just plants a seed of mistrust and all of that in it, because we saw what the ramifications were. Especially to our elderly community, the number of deaths across the state and right here in Pittsfield and Berkshire County to the seniors. It was not something that obviously was planned. There wasn't something you could take a book and blow the dust off of. And we had done things like that with the swine flu and other things back the late early 2000s, 08, 09, 2013. But
Bird flu.
bird flu, but it was never at a pandemic level,
No.
and worldwide. And, because I'll never forget almost Pittsfield being ground zero. I remember the governor flying, not literally, but, to Pittsfield on the front of
Yeah.
the steps of City Hall. Kind of like, well, what the hell are you doing, Pittsfield? What did you do? And then I think as he
Yeah.
drove back to Boston, it followed him all the way back. It was just that quick. And but yeah, we were almost ground zero for the
Yeah.
state. And if you recall, there was a convention in the Boston area. I think it was probably in for some reason, or Charleston or something. But there was a big multi-country.
Yes, I do remember that,
Yeah,
right?
and that's where they think it all started. But it was just scary. And but it went, and I have to go back. We've said this before on the show.
Yeah.
I think Linda Tyer creating the task force and getting everybody involved and creating, we use the old jail as like a headquarters. That's where the PPE and all that stuff was marshaled and got it out to people that needed it, and attacked it. The health department did a phenomenal job both locally and through the state to keep people informed of what was going on. Then you recall the rapid creation, if you will, of the vaccine, and then
Yeah.
we got to that point when had a distributed out, and we were making appointment after appointment after appointment for seniors to get them out to BCC to get their first COVID vaccine and then the second shot. I was just talking to the public health nurse the other day about that out of BCC. You know, everybody come in, well, I think we can do this a little better. It's like, well, why don't you go stand in the end of the line? Just let us go. We're doing
yeah.
we're doing.
They did,
thousands,
they did a magnificent
they
job.
They did, yeah.
But Jim, you got. I want the public to know. You know, it's budget time.
Yeah,
and there are those people on in government that say, let's take out the knife and hack away.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you wouldn't want them to do that if they're looking for your appendix.
Right.
So,
right.
Jim and his team. They in because the state in their infinite wisdom. They decided to have all the people 65 and older enroll for the shots online.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have friends, peers that I went to high school, don't even have computers. They just got cell phones. They thought, you know, I'll be home if they call. And so, Jim, you and your team, how many, maybe thousands of people did you register?
It was thousands, almost 10,000. Between the multiple vaccines. But again, you're absolutely right. And even more stupidly, and I'll use that term, the first thing they wanted to do is upload a copy of the front and back of your Medicare card, which first question,
get people who tell me to do that.
Yeah, what you know, there's like, what does upload mean? It's like, okay, we have a problem here. And then the state quickly said, you know what, that's probably not a good idea. We'll just show it when we go to the vaccine location. And that sped things up quite a bit. So we had everybody here at their desk taking the calls, making appointments, working through Berkshire Regional Planning. They were looking at the distribution of shots in the different places. So we got an allocation, we filled those up. And then if there were some extras, we, you know, the next few people on the waiting list got them in, you know, obviously first responders went first, nursing hospital staff went first.
Yeah.
And they needed to be, but I think, it, you know, could it have been better? Obviously. Anything can be better, but was it effective? Yes, it was very effective. Yeah. We got people that wanted vaccinations. They got their vaccinations. And it was just real proud of it. I'm real proud of the staff and everything to get that done. And again, it was driven a lot by Mayor Tyer and the team, Berkshire Regional Planning, which were part of the team, the state, all the volunteers that gave the shots out at BCC. And it was just something you want to capture all the lessons learned after action review of it, hoping we never, ever have to do it again. But I feel if we do, we've got a great baseline to build from. Instead of starting from scratch, we can pick up and improve upon practices of the past during that time and make it a better outcome for everybody.
Well, I always find it comical that Boston mimicked us and what we did with the command center and the command team. And, you know, the governor was out here. The mayor was, you know, the mayor now is Peter Marchetti, but the former mayor, Linda Tyer, put together understanding, to give her credit, understanding this is a major problem here. And I'm only one person. I'm not capable of handling it. And bringing everybody together. And I want to thank all the people, including you, that were on that team and were there and making decisions. And, you know, after the break, I do want to just talk a little bit more about COVID and about the schools. I watched the school committee meeting last night. You know, when you can't walk and you can't get around, you sit in a recliner and they sell elevate your legs. So I was looking through my shoes. You ever see Joe Curtis through a pair of shoes? He's a different looking guy.
I have.
We'll be right back. This is WTBR 89.7 FM on your radio dial. We are simulcasting today, Patriots Day. And take a moment and thank someone that you knew was in the service or possibly a relative, or drive into the cemetery. It doesn't have to be Memorial Day to say thank you. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs. Greylock Federal, opportunity grows here, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
Support for closed captioning on PCTV is brought to you by the Feigenbaum Foundation, with additional support from the Pittsfield Commission on Disabilities.
Do you have a favorite show on WTBR-FM? Did you miss the last episode? We've got good news for you. Most of our shows are now available on podcast. You can subscribe to your favorite and have the latest episode downloaded to your device automatically on Apple, Google, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or Overcast. Go to WTBRFM.com/podcasting and find out more today. WTBRFM, for the love of radio.
Hola, hola.
I'm Daisy.
Yo soy Marta.
Whether you want to learn a little Spanish or get a glimpse of our wonderful Latin roots, join us as we celebrate Latin culture with music from genres ranging from salsa to bachata. Gain insight on local news, community information, and very special guests. Only on Mundo Latino, welcoming listeners of all nations on WTBR 89.7 FM.
Support for Mundo Latino comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union.
Wonder what happened to those great local PCTV channels? Did you lose them? No worries, they're still there. Go to cable channels 1301, 1302, and 1303 to watch the best local content on television. News and information, sports and entertainment, City Council, School Committee, July 4th Parade. It's all there waiting for you. Pittsfield Community Television. For over 30 years, we are still your local television.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
We're back. I'm here with Jim Clark. He's a great guy. He's the head of the senior center. He just made it age-wise to get in. I have to say this, and I don't mean to embarrass you. Jim is a Taconic High School graduate. He's also a graduate of the Military Academy at West Point. So when we're quick to throw stones at our school system and our people who work in it, and who work with the kiddos, let's hold back a little bit, okay? Because we are an urban school district, but a lot of us have done okay. I mean, I don't hold myself out as Jim, but I've done okay in life. And my education got me from North Junior High to Pittsfield High to Berkshire Community College to Southern Vermont College to Goddard College, and I've done graduate work at Harvard. So I haven't really been a total failure. I don't do dishes well, and my vacuuming skills aren't what they used to be, but I hang in there. Jim, I read a lot about kids because I work the violent youthful offender program. So I try to stay. There's so many kids, and I heard them say last night, Joe Curtis and the team there, chronic vacancies, truancies, I guess.
Yeah.
I
don't know. Yeah. Absenteeism. Yeah.
Absenteeism.
Yeah.
Then I go back to my old life, and I would say that 85% of the young people I had in the violent youthful offender program would not have been there if their parents were acting as parents.
Right. Right. There was, I think it was Conti, that the teacher deportment, whatever the position was, reduced it from 52 to 48%. That doesn't sound like a lot, but that's a lot. When I lived out in the Chicago area, they had passed a law that if your child was absent for so many days, the parents got dragged into the court to explain why their children were not there. I'm not saying that's what we need to do, but I think that for the better part of it, spend a lot of time trying to figure out where these kids, and this is the elementary level.
I know.
High school, we always had skip day, this and that, yeah. it was kind of, let's see if we can be one step ahead of Joe Fox and not get caught.
God rest his soul.
I think, yeah. But, it's something that you want for your kids. And, you know, they need it. They cannot socialize. They cannot move forward in life without those foundational blocks that they need, that they learn in elementary school. But I don't know these parents. I don't know. There might be a lot of the anxiety and that the child's afraid to go to school. And part of it had to do with, for some of these kids, their first day in a brick and mortar school might have been second yes. grade. The kindergartners, first graders, and then Pittsfield extended it a year for those that chose to do it. So some yeah. of them have not gotten to a brick and mortar school until third grade. They missed
Somebody
out.
Somebody just told me that. I couldn't believe it. Yeah, right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. And you can see that in the kids. And, you know, even with recommendations saying, you know what, maybe instead of starting third grade, your child needs to start with second grade. And the parents didn't want to keep them behind. And a lot of those were parents that were that wanted to be involved and help. And the child made it through that second or third grade year that maybe they should have started in second.
Yeah.
But there's a lot that are behind. And it just the domino effect in reverse just going up. If you miss something in the third grade class and now you're in a new fourth grade class, maybe even with a new curriculum, now you're behind. And I think kids might be afraid to go to school, and not saying about the bullying and all that. I think the city's got a pretty good handle on that for the most part. The schools do. But it happens. If it doesn't happen in the school place, it's going to happen on the playground or after school programs. And that hasn't changed since the 50s and before. But I think the big thing is where is your child developmentally? I know Lauren's going through MCAS today. She had MCAS on Monday. So, you know, it'll be a good benchmark for where the kids are. And obviously, you know, Roseanne knows as well as I do. That, you know, at the beginning of the year, we do a benchmark. Where are you? What did you forget over the summer? What do you need some support on? And that's where Lauren comes in to work with the kids who aren't at the benchmark level where they should be.
Yep.
But then compare them throughout the year. Are they making progress or are they not? And thankfully, you know, most of them do make progress and they're trending in the correct way for inclusion in the next higher grade come, you know, the end of the school year. There's some that aren't. And I know at the elementary school level that it's basically up to the parent whether they want the child to stay behind or not. But when you get to the middle school and high school level, then it's really, okay, your child has not met the standards for, you know, advancement to the next grade and they've got to do seventh grade again or summer school or something like that. You know, and we've all seen that. You know, you don't want to keep your child behind because his friends are going to be on this and that. There's all sorts of good reasons why they shouldn't move forward. But at the end of the day, it's like, is this the best for my child to go further behind? So it's a parental decision. And as we know across the country, is that parental unit really there? And to make that decision, like you said earlier, parents need to be parents. And a lot of the parents are just children themselves with some of these. Because I remember at Morningside, some of the more senior kindergarten teachers were having kids of the kids that they taught kindergarten to.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a cycle. And Joe Curtis is the one, the big one. I remember when I was working at Morningside, he gave us a book to read. And it was a very mind-bending book. It was about breaking the cycle of poverty. And you know, some of the programs that helped break the cycle of poverty were music programs and art programs.
That's right.
As you recall, that Morningside was the first to have the Harmony for Kids for Harmony.
Yes.
And those kids were phenomenal. I can remember the little violins about this big that the kindergartners were playing, but it worked. I mean, it was a good program and arts and music and there's all sorts of programs. But again, to get ahead in life, what do you need to know? I mean, you know the basics. You need to know math, writing. Although people argue now that I can do everything on this.
Yeah.
that you would teach teachers on how to do math. I remember one thing when I was working in fifth grade that we did was a checkbook drill. So you gave the kid a checkbook, you got $300 in there. Okay, you just bought a TV, cost you $100. What do you have left? They're actually doing the math. Oh, I have $200 left. I got $25 from grandma for my birthday. Add that 25 in. And before you knew it, they were doing it. It was simple math, but it was also a life lesson. And I don't know if you recall, just a few, maybe about a month ago or so, one of the things that went viral was this teacher, I think she was in Houston, and she was charging kids in her classroom with their play money.
Right, right. Yes.
And rent your chair. And
yeah.
I thought it was fantastic because
I did too.
Because it mimicked their parents' life. Parents having to pay rent, parents having to pay car insurance, this and that. And it mimicked, you know, what their, and I can remember one of the funny parts was where one kid goes, "Hey, Mrs. Whatever your name is, I give up. You just take all my money and just go with it." and that was humorous, but it was a good drill. And it wasn't just for the kids to learn, you know, addition and subtraction, but it was also a picture of what their parents and other, as they grow up, this is what you're going to do. And it's tough. And I think, as you said earlier, I mean, we're going to feel the effects of COVID for a very long time.
Yes.
And not just for our school kids. I mean, again, it's the adults that struggle. They were struggling during that time before it. Their resources that they relied upon, especially our disabled community, relied upon that mental health, addiction, and all that. There was nowhere to go. Shelter that was over here at St. Joe, they closed in the morning at 8. You couldn't get back in till 4. And the idea from 8 to 4 was you go work with your social service partners. Well, the social service partners, COVID, were closed.
Yeah.
And they were working from home or via, you know, telephone.
Yeah.
So, you know, what support and help did everybody get? Did they get what they needed during COVID? And my, you know, non-professional opinion was I don't think they got what they needed, enough of what they needed. And you can see that.
You could see it if you were on North Street. They were in those little bus cubicles.
Right.
I call the one at Maplewood and North BMC. BMC South.
Yeah.
We learned a lot. I mean, I was with UCP at the time.
Right.
All of a sudden, all the people's transportation, except for our little van, stopped.
Right.
And, you know, and you guys, but I think I said to the former mayor, I said, you should sit down and write a book about what you did, why you did it, and who were the players.
Right.
Because that could work out to be, you know, I've been through several of these drills, going back to bird flu and monkey flu,
right,
and all,
yeah,
kinds of flu. In fact, I've been ordered by the supreme commander in this household to clean up my office and get rid of this paperwork. So there's.
Yeah, that. It'd be a great blueprint for, you know, going.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's why I said we wanted to capture the lessons learned.
Absolutely.
And you know, we had good people, you know, Mike Wynn, especially,
yeah,
Tom Sammons, again, role not only as fire chief, but head of emergency management, and then all sorts of other partners that partnered up during this pandemic. Again, I hope we never have it again, have to use it again. But if we do, we can start from a better position than we started in 2020.
And, you know, a hats off to all the people that you mentioned, Chief Sammons, former Chief Wynn, now Chief Collins. You know, it's and Gina,
yep,
Armstrong, Dr. Colbert. I mean, all these people, the mayor, Catherine, they're all, yep, like endless working,
yep,
to make it happen, you know, and the folks at BMC. But, hopefully that will over. I think. And your wife is certainly an expert. My, just off the top, going back to the Violent Youthful Offender Program, every one of them, Jim, every one of them had an IEP.
Mm-hmm.
and the discussions were really enlightening. Sometimes I'm not fault. I live with a teacher, but sometimes you got to look past the veneer and deal with the. I mean, they're all tough guys at one point until you broke them down and found out that their mother told her they were no damn good like their father or something.
Right.
You know. So, but I know our school department, our SPED, and all those people. All the people, they're doing a great job. Taconic, I have to say this too about Taconic and all that they do at Taconic and the vocational school. You know, we've been going out there about once a month to do a live show in the morning from their studio.
Mm-hmm.
The enthusiasm that I see and the positive spirit you feel when you go in there, It's rewarding. That's all I'm going to say. I feel great going in that school.
Yeah.
And I want to thank the principal for Matt
Bishop.
Yeah. Yeah, Matt Bishop for lifting the restraining order, letting me go in there.
It's I think the programs, you know, I obviously went to Taconic when it was, college prep and vocational, the turning of it over to be a full vocational school. We've said this many times, college isn't for everybody.
That's right.
And it's good to have a trade. And, you know, COVID kind of put a kibosh on some of it, but George Haddad and Taconic's combining of the automobile technician program, mechanics course, you follow everything, you come out there and you had a job and a high paying job. And that was a good thing. Auto body, back in the day, Don Murphy, they'd build a new house every year.
Yeah.
And those great programs, the programs for, cosmetology and the other programs that are open to everybody as well. I mean, it's not going to be colleges for everybody. And the cost of college, as you see, is just, and you don't want to be in debt the rest of your life. And can't guarantee you're going to get bailed out every time you do that. And I think, this community is full of trades and they're lacking people. Just look what it takes for us in the city to keep plumbers and electricians on board because they're hard to find. And HVAC especially. I mean, as the climate changes a little bit and gets warmer and warmer, where we years ago, you turned on the air conditioner maybe once a week or a week at a time. Yeah. Now it's like, okay, got to put the air conditioner back in. And people need to maintain those. And it's, I think that, anything that's, post-secondary school is fine, especially if it, again, is something you like to do. If it's something, if you go to college and can't decide to your third year what you really want to do, you've kind of wasted 2 years. I'm a big advocate for going to BCC. Can still live at home, maybe still work.
Yeah.
But get all your core courses out of the way. And then all those credits transfer to state colleges where now you don't have to take English 101 and this and that. Again, you've got it out of the way. Now you can focus on what it is you want to be. Whatever occupation or field that you want to study, you've got the core courses out of the way. And I think that's a great model. I don't know how far it extends beyond Massachusetts. I imagine it would in some other states. But it really is a good model. I went out and taught a class last week for up-and-coming social workers and talked about aging community and all of that. And what I said to him, I said, this county's only getting older by the
That's
day.
That's exactly right.
Second oldest county in the state next to Barnesville, which is basically the Cape. And you're going to be dealing with a lot of seniors, a lot of senior issues, homelessness, and dementia and Alzheimer's, which we take very seriously here.
Yeah.
It's just becoming not a crisis, but it's, we're starting to see more and more cases. And as we've said before, the demographics of Pittsfield, when I graduated from high school in the late 70s, all my classmates that were moving to Houston, then it was Charlotte, then it was Atlanta. Yeah. So those families are all there. My friends live there. They grew their families there. But now their parents are in trouble up here. So what do we do? I pick up from Houston and move home to take care of you? Do you pick up from Pittsfield and move to Houston to take care of me, for me to take care of you down here? Or which nursing home do you want to go into? Or which, you know, assisted living facility you want to go? It's a tough conversation. And we have a lot of people living alone in large homes because they raise their families, four or five kids, live in a home all by themselves now still. Same tax rate, same everything, same water and sewer bill that you had when you had seven people there. Now there's one. And where do you downsize to? You know, there's not a lot of places to downsize to that are affordable.
And who's going to do it with an interest rate of 8%?
Exactly. That's the other thing.
I mean, I Roseanne and I have been retired now for a while. We used to be on a fixed income. Now we're on a shrinking income.
Right. I remember you saying that the other day. Yeah. And it's true. And it's going to take a while to catch up for that. And I don't know if they can be caught up because you're not going to get, you know, mm-hmm. I know there's a look at now at the federal level to look at, you know, the sparse 2.7% increase in Social Security. But then again, your rent at Berkshire Town is based on 30% of your income. So right off the bat, you're going to lose part of that for a rent increase. And as cost of goods, medications, all of that stuff are going to eat up that 2.7% increase then to the point where it's going to be more than 2.7. So that's where the shrinking comes in.
And you know, before we have to go, I do want to say, too, that if you are a senior, and you should take advantage of the senior center. Mm-hmm. They do, you know, they have a little cafeteria there, but they have a lot of programs. But why I'm saying this is I just bumped into a friend a couple days ago. Got to get out of the house, dude. You can only watch Jerry Springer. I know for a fact, because when I had my open heart surgery, I used to watch reruns of Jerry Springer, and I started to act like him. Some people think I still do. But what they get at the senior center, and Jim Clark, and I said it earlier, and I mean it, I think his military experience working with, in not only working, I like to use the word living and existing with others, especially in the barracks, where the old barracks were a lot different than the new barracks. But, Jim, I can't thank you enough for coming on this Patriots Day. And like I said, folks, I think Jim will go along with me. Thank a patriot. If you got a cousin, an uncle, a friend, whatever, say, you know what, as patriots, I want to thank you for being a patriot. And if they passed, make a visit.
Yeah,
you know, we try to, the Polish princess and I, we try to stop by the cemetery once a week. Now, some people say, well, that's just an old superstition. Well, you know what? I feel good about it.
Yeah.
I feel good that I stop up and I never forget. And I would say this to everyone. Never forget, one day you'll be there.
Right.
And you'll be looking for a visitor.
And what I'd recommend, Bill, is that you get Amanda on. They're getting ready to put the flags in, and we're going to try and change it up a little bit this year.
Okay.
To have volunteers, community volunteers to help in addition to our normal group. Everybody asks after the fact almost every year, what can I do next year? And then they don't come back around until after the event. So have Amanda.
I'll reach out. Don't take this as a threat. I'll stop by.
Oh, geez. Okay. We'll lock the doors. Yeah.
Okay. That's fine. That's what usually happens when people see me. But Jim, I will see Amanda. And please do this to your Lauren and all the people that she knows. Tell them at least this program appreciates everything they do with so many other people.
Right.
Yes, there's the yakety yakkers. But, you know, as I said to a guy the other day, was running his trap and about plowing. Ah, oh, boy, that's a plow. That's a, Yeah, I don't know how to plow. They're going to... I said, have you ever driven a plow? No. That's all I need to know. Have a good one. You know?
Yeah.
But Jim Clark, you are the best. Thank you. I've got a couple of announcements, and then I will be gone enjoying the rest of Patriots Day. Hopefully not in some other place than my recliner. Jim, you're the best. Hope to see you and Lauren soon.
All right, Bill. Thank you so much. Best of luck.
I'll be up to see Amanda.
Okay, perfect.
Thank you, bro. All right, a couple of quick announcements, and this is a really good one. You don't want to miss it. This is the First Baptist Church on South Street. Y'all know where it is. It's going to be April the 27th, and it's a phenomenal turkey dinner. But there's some things you have to do. Dinners will be eaten in with advanced reservations and takeout. For all dinner reservations, please call 413-442-8592, Frank and Lynn, and place your order. And again, you'll absolutely, positively love it. Also, Parish Family Concert, Vince Ambrosetti, he's a singer, will be taking place April the 21st, Sunday, 6 p.m., at the St. Joseph's Catholic Church in downtown Springfield. Future Full of Hope Parish Mission will be Monday and Tuesday, April 22nd and 23rd at 7 p.m. If you have any further questions, please call 413-445-5789. To everyone, have a wonderful day. God bless. And today, let's do something for somebody else. You'll be rewarded. Trust me. I was certainly rewarded yesterday at the Berkshire Medical Center's emergency room. Thank you, people, for all you did for me. Take care, everybody. See you soon. Happy Patriots Day. Bye.